Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with our friend Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator. And today I think she's going to be Susie Sunshine, but maybe not. You never know because, you know, she's got her rights to do what she wants to do. And, of course, okay, Angie, what are you today, Susie Sunshine or Debbie Downer?
Oh, I'm always Susie Sunshine. It's just a matter of if I'm depressing while I'm happy. You know, that's the... The key in this business is to be able to tell someone to go to hell and have them look forward to the trip. That's what someone told me one time when I was just getting started. So that's my goal in life anyway.
And that sounds like a good plan to me. And obviously, you never know. And of course, so, Angie, we've got, you know, markets that are, I don't know, basically we would call them deceased if we were actually a coroner. Because they've done nothing for quite a while, at least in the grain space. I mean, we'll talk about life cycle a little bit today, too. But what's your take on just forget about price for now, but what's your just take on the overall action? And what do you foresee here? Is there going to be some action coming back at any time soon?
Yeah, I think so. But I don't know if it's going to happen much before the holidays at this point. I don't see why it would necessarily have to. I mean, our main focus right now is trying to button up the crop. The Eastern Corn Belt especially has been dealing with a lot of really wet weather, so we haven't had a chance to, you know, I got customers that still have some soybeans sitting out in the field and stuff like that, which is not what you want to see. You know, when Christmas music starts playing in stores, you'd like to be wrapping up with most everything. So that's been a struggle, and that really kind of limits, I think, any sort of significant change here domestically speaking. The USDA, I don't think, is going to make any big moves in the report that we have this week. I don't think they need to. And we're still a ways away yet from Brazilian weather really impacting production. I mean, of course, it's the start of the growing season, and there's a lot of talk of them being behind on planting, which they are versus a year ago especially. But still, you know, like I said, we're still 3 months out from really knowing how the weather is going to impact overall yield and acreage estimates and things like that. So we're just kind of here sitting on the unknowns. You know, we've still got the 800-pound gorillas in the room when it comes to NAFTA and Chinese relations and North Korea and, you know, that geopolitical tension that we've been talking about. But much of that, I think, risk has been factored in or forgotten about even, you know, it's something we'll deal with down the road. And so I think we're just stuck, unfortunately.
Well, when you say stuck, I mean, you know, again, this is not a new phenomena in the world of grains or any market. I mean, basically around the globe, almost every market is just kind of dead. So What does that mean to you as a trader, as a farmer and is with all your relationships?
Yeah, I mean, it just means that from my standpoint as a trader or working with farmers or anything like that, there's not a lot going on. There's tons going on in the sense that farmers are looking to wrap up harvest and take care of what they have to take care of and starting to devise plans on what we're going to do for you know, production or movement out of the bin as time goes on. So it's given us a chance to kind of talk about that, but there's not anything that you could call exciting. I mean, beans are the most exciting as they have been, and they're even stuck in a pretty narrow trading range. I think they're kind of drilling it down to where it's a 20, 25 cent trading range, which is tiny in beans. Corn is a dime range, it seems, 345 to 355. And wheat tried to do something last week. That was a little scary. You know, it tried to take another leg lower. It did, but now we're back up above that 425 support. So, you know, as a speculator or someone who's looking to scalp the market, it's a good deal in the sense that your risk is somewhat limited in because the market volatility is almost non-existent. But for a farmer or someone who's trying to generate some sort of trade or excitement about trading, you know, it's almost impossible because we're just here. And, you know, it's how it used to be. I can't complain in the sense that it used to be where you could walk away from the screen for a while in my role and not feel like you were missing out on a whole bunch. And that's kind of where we're back. I mean, it'll be nice for people in my position, I guess, to be able to celebrate the holidays because watching the markets trade at this point is like watching paint dry. You know, but maybe that'll change. I don't see why, though, unfortunately.
But you know that it'll come right before the holidays. You'll get busy and you'll have to be really humping because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something will change. And, of course, markets are thin to begin with when that happens. And then all of a sudden, here you are. And now you're busy trying to put out fires because all of a sudden something did change and something did happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's usually how it works. As soon as it lulls us into a sense of false security, it's when everything changes all over again. So, yeah, I mean, I'm fully expecting, you know, especially now that it has lulled me into the sense of false security because I'm just sitting here watching the market. You know, it's like Groundhog's Day. So I'm sure now I'll turn around and we'll get caught way off guard by something. But for now, it's something that is in the works. It's not something that's very obvious, which like we talked about the last time, you know, that's how the market works. The opportunities come when it's not obvious or when they're, you know, they're very rarely does opportunity come with a neon sign saying, here's your opportunity, at least in this market structure.
Well, I mean, again, isn't the key to be prepared for activity and ready to go. So if you're hedging, it's the key was to sell some before and be prepared for it. And then if you want to do more, then to understand what the market may do, because now would be the worst time to do any type of anything, basically. I mean, you know, obviously you'd always want to make sure you're protected from a risk standpoint, but there is not a lot to do from a trading standpoint right now. What do you think?
Exactly. No, I agree 100%. In my role, you know, it's one of those things where customers of mine, who were aggressive and who worked or followed the line of what we were trying to accomplish have a decent amount of corn contracted that's allowing them to move what they need to move, corn or beans, during harvest time here and do so at a nice profitable level versus where current prices are trading. And most now, we're taking this time, like I said, where we're slower and experiencing these rain delays and stuff like that. We're taking this time to just start talking about, okay, what do you need to accomplish mainly for cash flow? Because we've moved a lot of the bushels that were needed to achieve the space needs to get the harvest wrapped up and out of the field. So now it's a conversation about when do you need to move it? How much do you need to have by when? And we're working on finding where the best homes will be for those bushels, you know, after the first of the year. And so that's the best way to go about it is to plan. I always tell my customers that the absolute worst thing you can do is call me up on January 10th and tell me you need to generate a few hundred thousand dollars worth of income by January 15th, because you're going to end up selling into a market you don't want to sell into. So we're working to avoid that because every little bit, you know, every penny, 2 cents, 3 cents really helps in this market structure and helps to make the customer feel a little bit better about what he's trying to achieve.
And isn't that always the case? We always sell into a market when we don't want to sell. We always buy into a market we want to buy. This is the goddess herself, Angie Setcher, the goddess of grains. And she's also the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator. We're going to step out here for a break and come back with more from Angie after the break. But this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Remember, libertytalk.fm. You can download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And don't forget to sign up for Bubba's Daily Update, which is done daily right after the markets close. I send out a little video telling you what I saw and what I think will happen the next day. So check that out at BubbaTrading.com. We're going to step out of every break. We'll be right back with more from the goddess herself, Angie Setcher. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back to you. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains on Twitter. Also the vice president of grains at Sisses Elevator, and also our friend and our regular contributor trying to help us out and help everybody understand better what goes on in the farming and producing industry. Okay, Angie, so I got a question now. You know, we hear about, you know, big crops coming out and all kinds of stuff. Now, when a farmer or a producer put together their plan at the beginning of the year, now they're planning on what? So how many, like if you're in, we'll use Iowa. We'll use, you know, prime farmland. So I'm planning and I'm basing my cost on, let's say, 160,000 bushels, right? An acre. Is that right?
Yeah, 160,000. Yeah, that's what you're going to produce. Yep.
Okay, so now if I produce 140 and the price mm-hmm. doesn't rise, I might have a problem, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And if I produce...
I mean, that's why every farmer works to maximize yield. So there's a lot of conversations that people have where, of course, low prices are supposed to cure low prices by reducing production, right? You know, and so I've seen several people on the outside looking in say, well, why are the farmers working so hard to achieve maximum yield? Wouldn't they be better off to reduce their production? The reality is that every farmer needs to maximize that production, because you can stomach low prices with more bushels a heck of a lot easier, you know, and a lot of guys will tell you that. They'd rather run 200 bushel to the acre corn at 350 than 125 or 135 bushel to the acre corn at $5.
So that's
just because they're able to pencil out more revenue with that higher production number.
So that's my real question. So that's where I'm getting to. So if I'm mm-hmm. if I'm priced in at 160 and I all of a sudden do 180, but I'm getting the same kind of money, because I mean we haven't moved much one way or the other, right? Corn's been stuck between 345 and 355 forever. Mm-hmm. So if I do 20,000 more, then I'm in better shape, am I not?
Yes. Yeah. I actually have had this conversation. There are a few guys in central Illinois and in other parts of the country here that are producing well beyond what they were anticipating and producing well beyond what they planned on being able to hold. You know, I had a few farmers that have went out and built their own little personal temporary storage ground piles, you know, where they've built, put a couple rings, steel rings on the outside, put corn in the middle and tarp it to hold on to it for a couple few months. And even by doing that, building that temporary grain, they still have extra. And so they'll call me and say, what do I do? I said, you sell it. You flat out sell. Those are gravy bushels. That's what I call them. They're your extra income, your extra revenue. Yes, you want to try to maximize your income on them by finding the better market, you know, available to you locally. But when it comes down to it, you have outproduced what you were anticipating, and that's extra income no matter how you slice it, on top of the income you were in planning on bringing in at X price.
So if you could do this for me, walk me through, you know, it's January and I'm getting ready for the new year and I'm starting to figure out my next year's costs and whatever. So I'm going to go through and make my plan to plant corn. All right. And so what steps do I go by? How do I calculate what my costs are going to be? How do I figure it all out? What do I put together and how do I arrive at the number that I'm going to arrive at?
Most farmers will put together a spreadsheet, and in that they will take into consideration, they'll do it acreage based, first of all. So they'll go out and say, okay, I'm going to apply, you put everything together first, and then you break it out by acre. So you'll want to take into consideration your equipment costs, your income. You know, a lot of farmers might do things a little bit differently where they itemize their cost of living. Others will just give themselves a salary. And so the easiest way to go about it, of course, is to give yourself a salary, but there may come a time where you have to end up itemizing all of those costs. But, so you've got to factor in your cost of doing business, your insurance, your equipment costs, allocate your equipment costs based on a percentage. If you're 60-40, then of course, 60% of your equipment cost goes towards corn and 40 towards soybeans or whatever it may be. And so guys will sit down, they'll figure out their seed costs, their fertilizer costs, their cost on diesel, you know, based on estimated use versus the last several years and the a lot of it is nice educated guesses. What is the cost of diesel going to be as the year progresses, et cetera, et cetera. And then they'll break that down into an acreage base and come up with a cost per acre of production for each crop. And then with my customers, the ones that I talk to, and we kind of work through building this marketing plan and stuff like that, then they'll sit down and say, okay, this is my cost per acre. Let's say it's $500 or whatever it may be. Then they'll sit down and say, what is my production history on this farm when it comes to corn over the last 5 years or 10 years, depending on how they want to work it. And so we'll say if it's a 175, so you'll take that $500 per acre divided by your 175 yield, and there's your cost per bushel worth of production. Now I tell my customers to come up with three anticipated outcomes. So what has been your worst yield? What has been your best yield? And what has been your middle of the road yield? And then that way they have a spectrum on which to focus and work around. And I have some guys that'll drill it down even further to where they'll take that yield per field and break down anticipated cost or anticipated revenue, you know, for each field or unit on the farm and stuff like that. So it all depends on that, in detail they want to get. But for the most part, they can sit down and say, okay, you know, like I said, if it's a 500, their cost per acre is 500 and their yield's 175, then their break even is $2.86 a bushel. And so then they have to figure all costs included, you know, that they're above that 286 in order to make money. And so some might just keep it revenue per acre where they'll use that 175 times current market price or target market orders and say, okay, this is what my revenue per acre income is going to be, and this is what my cost is, and this is what I should take home. So it varies by the producer, and you know, some could tell you exactly what they yield down to the acre. You know, and what that cost is and what their inputs are. I mean, the one thing that's really changed production in a lot of ways across the countryside is what we call variable rate production. So we've learned so much through science and technology. Now a farmer is able to go out and like I said, drill down to the acre, you know, how much fertilizer. He may not have to put as much fertilizer on one portion of a field as the other, or may not have to plant as heavy in one part of the field as the other and stuff like that. So it's kind of amazing to see how technology has improved production and drilled down the farmer's ability to figure out his cost of production. But then there's other guys that just throw it in the ground and see what happens at the end of the year, you know. So it's a really interesting industry to be in, to see the wide range of how people go about their business.
Right. But of course, so if we calculate 160 at 276 and we do 180, that means our cost did not rise very much because we're having a bumper crop. Our costs change when we produce less than what we based it on, correct?
Yes. Your biggest drawdown or the biggest problem, and it's just like in anything else, your hardest struggle to make it through will be if you produce less than what you were anticipated. And that's, like I said, that's what I always tell the guys. That, well, I have more grain than what I was expecting. That's not a problem. You know, that I have a problem. No, that's not a problem. That is a bonus. You know, consider it as you were expecting X amount of income this year, and your boss came to you and said, here's, you know, an extra $50,000 because you produced $25,000 more, or you know, 25,000 bushel more than you were expecting, or something like that. And that's, like I said, part of the driving factor behind why farmers will always work to maximize their yield as much as possible. Even though, you know, had a conversation on Twitter not long ago about with a gentleman expecting fertilizer values to go down because farmers were going to cut their use of fertilizer. Very few farmers, unless they discover that they're over utilizing fertilizer and stuff like that, very few will cut down on their ability to maximize production, because having higher than expected production is better than anything else for a farmer overall.
All right. And that is the words, according to the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be back with more from Angie at the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. Go download the show every single day so you get to hear people like Angie, who's always chipper and is very Susie Sunshine today. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I know. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, just a reminder, we're working on the high school investing program. And of course, I've supported myself for 6 years, but now looking for a little help. If you want to help out, go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading and you can help donate there. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. So Angie, we've got a market that is dull as dull can be. And of course, I'm from the school that believes that equity markets go higher when they're dull because people chase yield, it's drifting, and they know that they can get possibly a dividend. But of course, when you're in the in grains or livestock or any commodity, they don't pay a dividend. They just kind of drift. So I say that for the most part, dull markets in agriculture drift lower. Dull markets in equities drift higher. Any opinion?
No, I agree. I have always said that in commodities, no information is tends to be bearish. You know, it's the old bulls need to be fed every day, a bear can hibernate sort of deal. And yeah, so that's part of what our problem is. Everything is known. And when I say everything, I use air quotes. But right now in commodities in general, you know, specifically in grains and oil seeds here, we just finished a production season and we feel comfortable with those knowns, and we're too early in the new production season in the South American marketplace to have anything known that would be considered, you know, different than what we anticipate right now, which is basically using normal production during a normal year, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, we have no reason to trade dramatically lower, we also are significantly lacking a reason to trade higher. Thus, here we sit, you know, for the time being.
Right. Now, again, look, that's part of the business and it happens all the time. This is not a new event that we've never seen before. Yeah. I mean, we see it, you know, almost yearly, right? There's certain times of the year that typically are not very busy. Now, When farmers and producers make a decision, you know, a lot of them rotate crops from one to the next. And of course, apparently the biggest money is usually made in soybeans. But again, you know, they don't produce as many bushels. I'd have to do the math. But at these prices, where is the best place to have the best crop?
Right now, at these prices, it's either, and it all depends on your individual costs, of course, which are very specific to each operation. But I would say the best position to be in is somewhere where your yield is up versus what your expectations are or what your normal crop would be, and your market is strong. So, you know, I would venture right now that the best place to be for any producer or farmer or whatever that may be, is actually in my home state corn market right now, because my guys have found that their production is up actually surprisingly above a year ago. I would have never expected that based on how the crop finished. I thought for sure we were going to see a significant reduction in corn yields at the very least in beans, which beans have not been as exciting as what you could say corn is. But corn yields have been above last year, been well above expectations for a lot of my customers. There's been a lot of guys that have had to move an extra 20, 25, 30,000 bushel of corn or more. And the market has been strong because harvest has been slow. And so we're working at some reasonably strong opportunities, especially if they have hedges in place. But even if they're selling into the cash market, you know, they're able to do it at a much better value because the basis has been strong. You know, they're offering premiums or on dry corn or discounts on drying the corn, which has helped too. And so the farmer is, if he has a strong local market and has produced above his expectations, that's the best place he wants to be. Of course, a strong futures market would be even better, but you know, that I guess you can't ask for too much.
Well, I mean, again, we unfortunately, you know, this is a risk-taking type of business, and you know, there is no easy risk. You know, you can look at certain things that you believe to be the case. But one thing we did know for sure, or you and I both agreed on or felt, is that when corn was at, you know, well over $4 and wheat was close to $6, that was probably a good place to take some profit out or at least hedge out a little bit, right? And
I had customers that they hedged 410, 415. You know, on the December board and you look out right now and they're intending to hold it. They can hold it into June or whatever. And there's 30 cents carry, and basis is even to slight overs. And so they're able to turn that into almost 450 cash corn, you know, with a strong basis value and an aggressive approach to the market at what was a profitable level and learning how to properly trade the spreads to maximize the carry they're receiving for holding that grain. Unfortunately, it's only a few guys. I wish it was a ton more, but there's a way to maximize your gain, you know, with very limited risk as a producer.
So, you know, again, one of the big things, you know, that you and I have to look at is, you know, where's the value? So now, if I look now, I have to say value is by being long corn and wheat, not so much soybeans, although they're okay, look okay from a chart standpoint, but they don't, you know, again, they're a little pricey. And of course, I remember guys were calling for $6 soybeans not that long ago, right? But I'm not worried about what they're saying, but I do look at corn as a value. I mean, because if you take out the ethanol value, you know, corn is under $2 basically. And to me, that's pretty cheap unless we're going to quit eating. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it, is the ethanol and improvement. And you know, yeah, I think when it comes down to it, if you're looking at the best upside potential, again, it's both corn and wheat at this point. I mean, I'm really right now watching what's going on in South America. You know, yes, we have plenty of corn here in the U.S. I don't think that's a question. I don't think it should be a question about whether or not we have plenty. We have tons of corn, which is great. Guess what? The world has tons of corn demand, you know, and we're looking at what's going on in China, you know, which the numbers, of course, are questionable on what they have going on there anyway. But they're chewing through 800 million bushels of expected carryout this year. We just had a huge export sale announcement on Monday for over 5 million bushel to unknown, which tends to be China. On purchases, we've definitely seen them resurface into the import market when it comes to corn. And right now, Brazil is struggling with seeing an increase in production. You know, their production is not going to be near last year's for second crop corn. And so if we can see that Safrina crop back off, I think we'll be surprised at actually last half of the marketing year corn export figures. I think they'll be better than anticipated by a lot of people. And because of those reasons right there, I think you've got strong upside potential in corn. I think winter wheat acres are going to be the lowest on record for wheat. And the global market is limited on available supply. I think we'll find, you know, just because you have quote unquote a supply of wheat doesn't mean it's moving into the market pipeline. So I would say that, yeah, wheat and corn to me have the best upside potential. You know, I think the scariest thing right now is if we don't see corn really do much. And we see soybeans, you know, November soybeans stay around that $10 mark plus, and you're going to see a continuation of, trying to grow acres in South America and perhaps even growing acres in the U.S., which we don't need. So I think soybeans have found kind of their happy place at this point. I don't really see, without a production issue, why they would have to trade much higher. Whereas corn and wheat, I think, have really taken the beating over the last couple years, and the demand should stay solid for both, perhaps, you know, pushing us into situations where we have to encourage a growth in production.
No, I agree with that. And again, I look at it and I go, well, geez, we've got, you know, such cheap corn. I mean, it's like, to me, it's like I'm like a farmer storing it in my bin, or I'm like a farmer, mm-hmm. I'm just going to buy the futures because, again, yeah, could they go lower? Of course they go lower. But I mean, if you look at it, the risk is not very big. Even if it goes to zero, I mean, it's, you know, each contract is about $17,000 if you just bought the contract and held it forever, right? I mean, so I got to always wonder about that type of exposure. To me, it seems, you know, we you know, as traders, investors, we get so caught up into markets and you know, we forget that things can change, not in a second, but in a microsecond, and something could change to change the dynamics of these markets, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's, I mean, as a farmer, of course, you're perpetually long in this market structure anyway. And but that's the one thing that the market, the folks on the outside of the market tend to forget is, as long as you don't need the cash, you know, so if you're a farmer and you're sitting there and you have had either reasonable income come in, or you generate income through a reasonably solid outside job or, you know, in an elevator situation, if you just have the space and a good, healthy working relationship with your bank, you know, these supplies can be held out of the market structure until the price improves enough to where they're encouraged to flow too. And, you know, so that's the one thing that people tend to forget is with a physical commodity like corn, soybeans, and wheat, you'd be amazed at how you can work to keep things out of the marketplace. We're having a conversation right now.
I hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we'll have that conversation on the other side. But of course, it is something you can hold it out, and you can actually create, if enough people hold, you can actually create a little bit of a shortage, which would obviously increase prices. We are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator. This, of course, is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure that you go to libertytalk.fm and download the program every single day. And of course, don't forget to get my daily update, which includes agricultural products, everything else, every day right after the close. I send it out, and you can go to bubbatrading.com and the link will pop up. You can fill it out. It is free. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz will be right back with our final thoughts from Angie after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess herself at Goddesses of Grains on Twitter, and also the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator, Angie Setzer. Okay, so you were telling us how to make billions of dollars by storing grain and doing all these great things, and as long as you have a good working relationship with your bank. Go ahead and finish, please, my dear.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have a good working relationship with your bank, it all comes down to an old adage of it's only worth what a buyer is willing to pay. And sometimes that's not a negative. You know, I tend to use that as a negative a lot of times when it comes to extra equipment or something like that. I tell my farmer, you know, it's only worth what a buyer is willing to pay. But on the grain side of things, for instance, we just had a really interesting development in the wheat market where a local mill needed bushels. Well, I have bushels, but I'm also anticipating on keeping those bushels into February, March, April. And if you look at the Chicago wheat spreads right now, there was a good 20 cents plus to hold it into March, and basis was 20-30 cents better. And so I offered up some of these bushels by saying, you know, basically, hey, I'll sell them to you for movement now for what I was planning on holding them for. You know, this is the target value I was looking to achieve come Jan-Feb movement. But if you want them in November, you can have them, but you've got to pay that carry. I'm not just going to empty out my space for you for nothing. I've got to be able to pocket that money I was hoping to achieve there. And it worked out. That's where, you know, we ended up making a sale for November movement at values that I was really hoping and hope, I mean, I always say hope's not a marketing strategy, but as a seller, you have a target value basis-wise that you're looking to try to accomplish, and we were able to get it. So now here we sit. Our weather has been really kind of wet the last couple, 3 weeks here. We have an ethanol plant that's trying to fill a pile with dry grain, and they're wondering what we'll sell grain for. Well, I will sell all of the grain that you need, you know, but you're going to have to pay me the value that I was hoping we would get if we held it into December and January. So we've started to see the cash market do some really interesting things. And, you know, if that follows into a change in spreads or something of that nature, then I think perhaps we could really see an indicator that futures should have to rally. But the amazing thing with a physical commodity, like I said, is just because you think we have all of these bushels left over doesn't mean they always need to find a home. Sometimes they're pretty comfortable sitting where they're at until the market pays up for them.
That's right. You got to make them pay up. You got to create the supply and the demand. So, So we got this dumb report coming out sometime this week. Give me your thoughts on what this report might say. Give me your thoughts if you think it'll move the markets.
You know, it could move the market. You know, I don't anticipate much in the way of significant change in this thing. I really don't. I think that with harvest being delayed this year, it's a little early yet to think that the USDA is going to make a major adjustment to the corn yield, soybean yield. I think they may be right on with where they need to be. There is some talk that we could see an increase in crush or maybe a decrease in production or something like that. But I honestly wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see the USDA leave their ending stock figures unchanged for all three, corn, soybeans, wheat, maybe make some slight adjustments, but I don't think anything life-changing. I think global production numbers are the most important. I'm going to continue to watch and see what they do with Chinese stocks and use and all of that stuff. I mean, I think we have to make some changes there. It's just a matter of whether or not the USDA does anything that is overly helpful, you know, from an overall standpoint. So I'm not expecting much. I mean, I didn't even know what day it was when you and I talked about it prior to record. I was like, it's one of these days. And so it's November 9th. I don't anticipate any major changes. Our days of that, you know, from a production standpoint are behind until we get to January. The only reports that'll really matter now, going forward will be the January 12th, quarterly stock. That'll give us December 1st numbers, which will be an indicator of what the actual crop production was. But it all goes back to how much importance you put on the reports anyway. You know, I think the cash market will be more of a driver by the time we get to that point than anything else.
Now, I know that the cost of goods that we buy, not grains and things, but, you know, tractors and things like that, have become obviously much more expensive because they're much more high tech now. But our cost of actually producing something is really dropped, right? I mean, you know, when you can harvest a field, probably, you know, I don't know the timing, but pretty quickly, because if you wanted, you could almost run three shifts with the gear we had today, so you could get it out in a hurry. So we don't actually necessarily need those much higher prices because we leave very little in the field versus the old days, right? I mean, you know, there's not much left out there anymore because we can skin those fields pretty good by the time with all this new gear and all this new equipment, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I always kind of laugh when we have the planting delay rally, like it matters anymore. You know what I mean? You'd be amazed living out here in North Central Iowa. You'd be amazed at the farmer's ability to work, you know, 18, 19, 20 hours a day. It amazes me. I couldn't do it. You know, where you'll wake up in the morning and they're already out in the field working, and you go to bed at night and they're still out in the field working, and you wake up at 1 a.m. and there they are working, you know, and the size of equipment. I mean, you know, when you could combine four rows, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever it may be, you know, it would take you a day to run 80 acres or whatever it may be. I mean, I've watched farmers out here in Iowa run 80 acres in 2 hours now or 3 hours or whatever it may be. I mean, it didn't time them, but they can pull into a field And my husband and I were laughing the one night we were watching them work, and we saw the guy running the grain cart, which is the cart that transfers from the combine to the truck, you know, that they're going to haul out of that field with. I swear he was in road gear. You know what I mean? Like, he never stopped. He was constantly running the combine, was running full bore, you know, running 12 rows or more. And so, yeah, our ability to do more with less people has really improved and cut into your costs and all of the things that go with the production side of things. I mean, it's expensive to purchase, but it comes down to the cost of convenience and what you're able to achieve with them and you know, things like that.
Well, it also comes into the cost of less damage later, right? If you've got the right gear, you're not going to have a problem. And I've heard some guys are actually they're picking up with one and dropping with another. It's been quite fascinating, especially in wheat. I guess you can overplant over wheat once you run the field. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I heard. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah. It's a double crop. So you run wheat. In Michigan, it's a little bit of a struggle. I think we've double cropped twice in my 15 years of experience or 14 years of experience where we were able to get wheat off in time and the conditions worked out well enough to put in a soybean crop behind, maybe a shorter day variety. But you see that a lot in the South, you know, where they're able to harvest wheat in March, April timeframe and throw some soybeans in or you know, something like that. And so, yeah, to put two crops on one field, and that's what the Brazilian producer does. That's why their safrinha crop has grown in so much popularity is their growing season is long enough and they're able to run soybeans and harvest them in January and February, you know, and put corn in that those same acres. You know, they can plant corn. The window there is into the first part of April. And then they run that corn June, July timeframe and they're able to get two flows of revenue. Now, second crop production is usually, you know, quite a bit lower, but there are also times where, you know, once you hit that point of second cropping where it's far enough into the growing season, you're able to get the seed cheaper. You know, and we've done different projects in the past where we've offered, you know, your second crop seed to the guys in the South in northern Ohio or southern Michigan.
Your second crop is free. No, I'm just saying, I mean, I understand. I'm running out of time. That's why I'm cutting you off. Otherwise, I'd let you talk forever. But no, I get that. And that's what I'm saying. So all of a sudden, you know, it's like a truck driver. You know, he drives with a full load. He has to come back empty. Well, now you've got a field that's out there. You can replant it. Anyways, Angie Setzer, you're the best. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains. It's Citizens Elevator. Thanks so much. I appreciate it, my dear.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy it.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day. Also, check out patreon.com/BubbaTrading. Help us out with the high school investors and get Bubba's daily update. Go to BubbaTrading.com. This is it for today. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you being here. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. The Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.